Welcome to TC Daily, the technology show brought to you by Tech Central. My name is Duncan McLeod. Now, if you're new to the show, do subscribe to us. You'll find us on YouTube at youtube.com/TechCentral. Or why not subscribe to Tech Central's daily newsletter? You can get that at techcentral.co.za/newsletter. And at 5 a.m. every morning, you will get the latest local and international tech news and all the details about the latest tech shows that we have published. Now, e-commerce is a particular area of focus of this show, and I'm very pleased now to welcome one of the most important players in the e-commerce space in South Africa, Sylvester John, who, Sylvester, I hope I'm getting your title right. I pulled it straight off LinkedIn. Vice President of e-commerce at Walmart in Africa, is that right?
I'm actually with Massmart, and so I'm the head of e-commerce for the group.
For Massmart. Yes. Okay. You need to update your LinkedIn.
I do.
You've been with Massmart for how long now?
About a year and a half, a little bit over a year and a half with Massmart, yeah.
Okay, great. But before that, you've had a lengthy stint at Walmart in the U.S., I believe. But you're also not a stranger to the African continent. You've worked here previously for Massmart, right?
That is correct. I actually just celebrated 10 years with Walmart. So
right.
Really, it seems like just yesterday, but started in Walmart U.S. in merchandising, and then spent some time in Africa. So this is my second time. I did do a stint with Massmart where I was in West Africa.
Right.
Led our West Africa growth for about 2 years. And then I spent about 6 years, a little bit over 6 years, helping build the Walmart U.S. e-commerce business, particularly with a focus on online grocery. And then I'm back now to Massmart for the second time.
Right. So what was your role in West Africa? What were you doing there?
Yeah, we were thinking about at the time Massmart was really focused on growth. And as we were building a strategy for expansion through West and East Africa with a real focus on food.
Right.
And so I was there primarily to help lead that strategic growth agenda. But I also had some responsibility for overseeing the game business as well out there.
Oh, good. Okay. So you were in the U.S. You were involved in building out the e-commerce initiatives at Walmart. Maybe just take us through a bit of what you were involved with there, what learnings you've drawn from that experience, and what from that experience you're planning to apply here in South Africa at Massmart.
Yeah. You know, Walmart has been on the journey for a while. You know, we started off as a company in Silicon Valley in California, and really looking at the general merchandise side. And about 8 years ago, you know, really started shifting towards the opportunity to compete in e-commerce with online grocery. And so that's when I joined, when we started looking at really leaning into grocery as the primary agenda for growth. And so I was part of a small group of folks who came together to conceptualize and build that agenda out. So I joined just a few months into the strategy. And so during that process, we studied a lot of what had happened in Europe, particularly UK and France, where they had been doing online grocery for over 16 to 20 years, and learned a lot about it. And interestingly, the U.S. hadn't really leaned into online grocery at the time. And we made the decision at that time to start off with pickup, click and collect, instead of delivery, whereas the world had really started with delivery, including Europe. And we learned a lot about that experience and decided to try the pickup experience. It was a real incredible journey because there was no playbook. And so Walmart really had to invent it. So in many cases, how do you reimagine the store and think about the store as a fulfillment center? How do you think about curbside, where you're working with space that you had already pre-established? You couldn't reinvent the space. And you had to think about educating the customer about this idea of outsourcing, feeding her family to what is, in essence, a stranger, when she had been shopping for her family herself, and building that confidence and comfort around the quality expectations around something as important as shopping groceries for somebody, and all the things that go from in between. You know, so it was a lot of learning, a lot of experience over that period. I played about 6 or 7 different functional roles during that journey. So I got to learn different aspects, including product and technology. Spent some time in Silicon Valley leading that team. Innovation and operational execution in the stores as well. So all that has really helped prepare me for really the opportunity we have here in Massmart.
Yep. So you arrived in South Africa, Johannesburg. Massmart is headquartered in Sunninghill. you arrived here straight from the U.S.?
Yes, straight from Denver.
What were your initial thoughts upon arriving at MassMod and looking at what the operation was doing on the ground here in the e-commerce environment in South Africa compared to where you just come from?
Yeah, well, the first thing is that because I had actually had a previous stint at MassMod, so it wasn't all totally new. I had a good sense of the company. You know, MassMod is obviously a portfolio of brands. We have Builders, Game, Macro, so it's unique in the sense that as you think about it, you've got to think about it as a group and how do you solve for these different propositions, different customer groups. You know, whereas in Walmart, you know, you've got one brand, Walmart, and you're really thinking about a certain customer type. So that was the first understanding and really trying to make sure we understood how we solve for all these different brands. You know, the second thing obviously was also the starting point where we did have websites for Builders, Game, and Macro, but they were in early stages, relatively immature, and so you're starting the journey really from a low base, and the broader market itself is relatively nascent, and so you're also starting a journey in an environment that is just about to take off, if you will. So those observations were key and crucial as we started thinking about what we do and where we go from here.
The South African market, and I'm sure it's not just the South African market, it's just markets around the world, but South Africa was, you used the word nascent, e-commerce as a percentage of total retail sales in South Africa is still small, but before the COVID-19 pandemic it was tiny. But a lot of South Africans warmed to the idea of online shopping and other technological solutions like tap to pay, for example, at retail stores, as a result of the COVID pandemic. How has that impacted MassMart over the last, say, 2 or 3 years? Have you seen a massive spike up, as other retailers have, in online sales? And do you see that continuing now that COVID seems to be a thing of the past?
Yeah, I think so. If you think about the journey, if you had the pre-COVID environment, and to your point, you know, the penetration was pretty low. You know, then COVID accelerated it quite a bit. You know, we've now leveled off and we're now in this post-COVID environment. We've experienced quite a bit of growth post-COVID, in fact, quite a lot. I mean, we announced that we've, H1 of this year, we grew our portfolio 108%.
Wow.
Which is quite high and in line with what our expectations are. And so we're seeing that growth continue. In fact, it's the highest growth we've had even. We're growing faster than we were in COVID, you know, but I'm not sure it's all because of COVID. I think what's happened is that the customer has gone through a COVID experience where, you know, she's had to enter the space by virtue of necessity and safety concerns. And in that process, she's discovered convenience. And there's a lot of perceptions that maybe she had that she's realized maybe some were not true. There were a lot of concerns about credit card risk and exposure from a security standpoint, and various elements that I think people were seen as blockers. And through the COVID experience, I think the customers come to understand that, you know, a lot of these things have developed and evolved. And so now in a post-COVID environment, that convenience has become premium. And so what we're seeing now is not necessarily just the fact that we're riding the COVID wave. We are now seeing a lot of people entering the space because word of mouth is spreading and people are getting more comfortable. And the truth is a lot of South Africans are on their phones anyway. So the adoption is not as significant, because if you look at the percentage of people on mobile devices, it's very high. You look at the percentage of people in social media, it's one of the highest engagement levels of social media in the world.
That's interesting.
You've got food delivery that's taken off quite well. People are ordering restaurant food delivery on their phones. So you've got a lot of activity. So the question is, as you look at the purchasing of products, you know, how do you accelerate that and recognizing people already adopting? So that path we're seeing a lot of movement. I think the big obstacle now for all of us is friction. The more we can remove friction from that experience and continue to address the issue of convenience, you would continue to see more adoption. And I think that's the journey we're on for sure.
Just make it easier and easier for customers to use this channel. I know we've spoken before about the growth predictions for e-commerce in South Africa. You have some numbers I think you've shared for 2030. Where would you say South Africa is in the e-commerce life cycle, the development of e-commerce, compared to a market like the U.S.? I imagine we're a number of years behind in not just in terms of total retail sales, percentage of total retail sales, but in other metrics as well. How do you see the South African market developing relative to the US and other markets over the next few years?
Yeah, we are really excited about the opportunity because if you, you know, first of all, South Africa is, you know, very early. You know, we think we're somewhere in the range of, you know, maybe about 4% penetration of modern retail right now. You know, most markets in the world are either high single digits, but most are really double digits. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, China, you know, is in a different league. Mm-hmm. You know, so we you know, as a given the economic level of South Africa, normally should probably be in the 6 to 8% range, if not probably more 8% by now. Mm-hmm. So we are 4%,
and
I think there's multiple reasons. Yeah. I believe that the, you know, if you look at a lot of the other markets, the pace of adoption was because the competitive environment was accelerated, mm-hmm. and that competitive environment created a faster pace of convenience for the customer. And so people were able to truly get convenience and there was not as much friction. So like we just got introduced to on-demand grocery delivery in the last year. You know, most of the world had already been there, you know. So a lot of these true convenience dynamics are just beginning to come into the market. Mm-hmm. But the truth is most of the e-com platforms still have a lot of friction today. If you go through a user journey, there's so many friction points in the journey. If you want to put your credit card, and sometimes you've got to put your credit card every single time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't remember it. Personalization is still so nascent. So if you look around the world, there's been a faster pace of true convenience and unlocking a lot of that friction. So therefore, more people adopt much faster. Mm-hmm. And it is only in the last 18 months, I believe, that you're seeing the pace of friction free experiences accelerate. Mm-hmm. So that's been, I think, the biggest blocker. Now there are other dynamics people will speak to. Well, the percentage of people on data and the cost of data. But I think a lot of other developing markets have had that and they've moved faster. So I would argue that probably one of the biggest things is to really ensure that people feel like there's true convenience, and you've got to really address a lot mm-hmm. of those issues. So in my view is that the opportunity ahead of us is really great because we believe we will get to about a 12% penetration by 2030. We believe that even if you look at the next 5 years, we'll probably get to about 8%. And so the real opportunity is what happens next, mm-hmm. because in reality, we're talking about 3.6 to 4% right now. So, you know, whatever is happening now is not as relevant as to the incremental 8% that's going to happen. So the question is, where do those consumers go? Mm-hmm. All those new adopters, where are they going to shop? Which platform are they going to use? And I think ultimately that's going to be a function of who can create the most meaningful, friction-free, and ultimate convenient experience for the customer. And I think there's going to be an increasing competitive environment around that front. Mm-hmm. And that's where the battle is going to really sit. And ultimately the customer will be the determining factor of those decisions. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm, fascinating. So, I mean, do you think, given that we're coming from behind here in South Africa, even relative to other developing markets, that we're going to that the growth of e-commerce in South Africa over the next few years is going to outstrip many other markets in the world?
The growth, yes.
Yeah,
the growth is much. This is where the growth is going to happen.
Right.
And I think we'll definitely get to double digits. Mm-hmm. And there will be obviously we see most of the growth in the world tend to start with general merchandise. So as much as online grocery is probably the fastest growing right now, the base is still very low.
Yeah.
So for the next 5 years, the real opportunity is what happens to purchasing of electronics and home furnishings and, you know, and apparel. Those are the things that are really going to accelerate. And then eventually, you know, 6 to 10 years from now, grocery is probably going to outpass that. Mm-hmm. And grocery will ultimately be the big opportunity 8-10 years from now,
right.
but the general merchandise is going to be the battleground definitely in the next
right.
5 years.
So online grocery is a big important area for Massmart going forward, is it?
It is in the context of obviously there's a fast growth, there's huge adoption, but more importantly the frequency is high because people are coming you know 2-4 times a month, whereas they're not coming to buy televisions 2-4
sure.
times a month. So that area is really important, and we're watching it. Now, relative to the Massmart strategy as a portfolio, mm-hmm. You know, we are a strong general merchandise player. That's our core.
Yeah.
You know, wholesale food and liquor is our core. Home improvement is our core. You know, retail food is not necessarily where we lead with. We do have some retail food in mass and in macro, mm-hmm. and we do well and really serve well in that regard. But our strategy as a business is really to really lead and win in general merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're putting a lot of focus there. That said, we do have a very strong and successful online pantry and liquor business. We have not really played in the retail food space relative to frozen and fresh online. So we've chosen to play in pantry and liquor and to distinguish ourselves by offering the customer proposition of, if you want to stock up your shelf and you want to get the best prices and think about an experience where you could buy for 3-4 weeks for pantry, then we're probably the better destination. In between, you could still go get your fresh products elsewhere, but we could be that pantry destination. Mm. So we've built a proposition on macro online that has really resonated well with customers, and we turned that on the last quarter, and we're seeing, you know, triple-digit growth in that area, and customers are really responding well to that offer.
I was going to ask about your long-term strategy in terms of brand going to market, in terms of brands in mass market. So you've got brands like Boulders, Macro, and others. Do you go to market and e-commerce through those brands exclusively, or do you create some sort of overarching portal that represents all of those brands at some point? What's your thinking in that regard?
Yeah, it was one of the interesting observations to your very first question around when I got here, as you're thinking about how do you develop an e-commerce strategy for a group that's a portfolio of brands. It's unique. I haven't had that opportunity before.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we think about it, you know, if you almost think about, you know, the role of the group e-commerce, we are trying to create a winning ecosystem that can provide synergies for different customer segments that we want to serve. So we have very strong retail brands that have stores that have clear value propositions and customers that love those brands, be those Builders, Game, or Macro.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that we understand the uniqueness of each of those brands. Each of them also, in some ways, cater to different LSM groups as well.
Right.
So there are some overlap, but these are very unique occasions. So we've chosen to be very intentional about providing a solution for each of them independently and make sure that we provide an omni-channel, because the strength of our business is the idea that we've got physical stores and we can enter the digital world as well. And so the idea of seamless shopping for that customer and allowing them to move between on and offline in a meaningful way is really critical. So therefore, we have websites for all three, and a lot of work we've done to reimagine that experience and reinvent that experience. And over the last year, you would have seen a transformation of the Macro website. You know, we've literally shut down the Game website, rebuilt it, and relaunched it. So it's a brand new experience. And we're now in the middle of repositioning the Builder site. So by the end of next month, you'll have a very different experience for Builders. So we're very intentional about those. In fact, we make sure the teams that work on those are slightly different, but they all kind of report in the same structure. We've then also, so you've got that. We also are very big in wholesale. And we believe there's an important opportunity as we think about the role of B2B. We're a leader in wholesale food and liquor. And so we have an opportunity to reimagine our wholesale experience. So you're going to see us do more in this space.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very different customer. But also you've got different segments in wholesale, because you've got, you know, company-owned use. You've got resellers. You've got petroleum food courts. You've got a number of segments that we serve today offline. And how do we think about those experiences and what those groups need? So that's a very different proposition. You know, we also have a small marketplace today that we have third-party sellers. We believe that a big part of the future of e-com, but even the future of retail, is going to be the role of marketplaces. In fact, the biggest disruptor of retail over the next 10 years, I think, is what's going to happen with marketplaces. And marketplace is a big general term, and there's different types of marketplaces. But the concept of third-party sellers providing long-tail products in an environment where customers are incredibly hungry for extended assortments, You see in South Africa the percentage of market share that goes to platforms that don't even exist in this country, like Shein or Amazon or AliExpress. I mean, there's a number of these platforms, Wish, that are having huge market shares in this country, and people are willing to wait 7-14 days for it to come from abroad. Really speaks to the demand for extended assortment.
Yeah.
You know, and so and this is not unique, this is what's happened around the world. So the role of a marketplace is going to become incredibly important. So we also have plans around how we think about that as part of our business and how what role that plays in the future as well. And then, of course, we acquired OneCart, which is a on-demand assets that provides a marketplace for retailers.
Mm.
And that is a very different proposition because it allows for a one-hour delivery.
Yeah.
Flexible labor, and provides the opportunity to not just play in a space that keeps us close to the growth of online grocery, but also, more importantly, the opportunity that on-demand is going to play, we believe, in the next few years, whereas customers get used to two-day delivery, then they're going to want one-day delivery, then they're going to expect, you know, two-hour delivery, one-hour delivery, and so that asset and that experience is a competency that we are able to build out leveraging this OneCart platform as well that serves that customer base. So if you think about all of those propositions, then our role as a strategy is how do we build an ecosystem of enablers that can power each of these five different opportunities, customer opportunities. So we're talking about technology enablers. So for example, we just deployed this month, a technology that allows pick, pack, the staging and dispensing in our stores that we have leveraged from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
That's a first-class fulfillment technology that we now can deploy to all of these five ecosystem businesses. You know, we've got OneDrop delivery services that we bought that provides us same-day delivery that can go from facility straight to customer without going through a warehouse, and we can actually meet same-day delivery capabilities as we strengthen OneDrop. But that can be a enabler that can power all five of the businesses, you know. And so as you start thinking about all of these enablers, we're building them out. We now have a DC to home capability where we can leverage our stores as fulfillment centers, but we also can ship traffic to central distribution. But that central distribution can also serve the entire ecosystem. So we're building a world of enablers, and then as those enablers get strong and become world-class, then all the customer platforms take advantage of them, and it allows them to then, as a platform, to focus on just the customer proposition. What is their strategy to win for their vertical? So like builders can just focus on winning for the builder's customer, but not have to worry about all the hard stuff. Because the central ecosystem is developing and providing that service to power the whole organization. So that's what we've been working on this year and next year. By the end of next year, we will have the entire ecosystem working in full spin. And part of our growth so far with 108% H1 growth is that we're building the plane while flying it. So we're already getting the benefits, but the real benefits are going to come when the whole thing is complete by the end of next year.
Are there any gaps in the portfolio that you still need to plug? Are there likely to be further acquisitions that you make?
Well, we're always open. We're always looking. We feel pretty good about what we're addressing now. But we're in an agile space. The environment changes. The customer talks to us every day. And we are not, we reserve the right, obviously, to fill new gaps. But right now, if you think about the four buckets of our focus, is we are all about getting the infrastructure and the foundation's right now. So that's around capacitating ourselves. We've been recruiting quite a bit. We've increased our technology capacity. We have hundreds of engineers now. You know, we are building out stronger store fulfillment capabilities with technology, but we've also put operations management into our stores that is just focused on e-commerce to drive execution. Central fulfillment is being done. So there's all these things, a foundational infrastructure. If you think of that like bucket number one, and that's our priority. Bucket number two is we've got to get our digital assets strong. So as we think about solving for builders, game, and macro. These were relatively immature experiences. Back to what I said about friction. Mm-hmm. We have to remove as much friction as possible if you're going to create true convenience. So a focus really has been for us, how do we ensure that these websites are as friction-free as possible? We're making a lot of progress there. And then how do we get into mobile mm-hmm. and become more of a mobile-first experience? 60-70% of our customers access us on mobile. So when we say mobile-first, we don't necessarily mean apps. We mean make the website work on a mobile device because the websites were built for desktop. So if you try to access a lot of websites in this country on your phone, it's actually not the greatest experience because it hasn't been adapted for a phone.
Yeah.
So we've gone back to reinvent our sites and get them all to be really mobile first. And everything we design now, we start with mobile and then we do desktop afterwards. Mm-hmm. We never start with desktop in our designs anymore, even on a website.
Fascinating.
And we've also launched mobile applications for macro, our first. So this world of enhancing those digital assets to make sure we can remove friction in the experience is the second bucket. We've made a lot of progress there. The third bucket is really around convenience and speed. You know, we used to offer customers 5 to 7 days delivery. And obviously in this environment, that's not good enough. And so we've been on a journey, which is where the OneDrop acquisition is so important, because by vertically integrating OneDrop into our businesses, we can bypass the warehouses and give packages straight to OneDrop and go straight to a customer. Mm-hmm. Whereas before you would give it to a courier and then it goes to a warehouse and it could take 2 to 3 days in the warehouse before it gets to the customer. So for 30 kilometers around any of our facilities, we want to be able to go direct from facility to customer. Mm-hmm. And that vertical integration is really making good progress. So today Macro is almost fully vertically integrated with OneDrop. We're working on Game. By the end of this year, Game will be fully vertically integrated, and Builders, we're going to get there by Q1 of next year, which means almost always, if you were to place an order from us, you will get it in 2 days mm-hmm. or next day. Mm-hmm. Today, we're at about a little bit over 60% of all of our orders are delivered within 2 days. By the end of this year, that number will probably be 70 to 80% of our orders will be delivered within 2 days. Mm-hmm. So speed is going to be incredibly important. On-demand through OneCart is going to be an asset that's really important to us as OneCart strengthens its capability to deliver in 1 hour or 2 hours. And we can leverage that capability in interesting ways that can benefit Builders, Game, and Macro without having to recreate it in Builders, Game, and Macro. Mm. So the OneCart asset is more agile and can give us that on-demand complement, you know, that will really make a difference. And then the pantry and liquor that we have built out, if you go to Macro today, you'll see a complete different experience where before, if you went on Macro, you only see televisions and fridges. So people didn't really know that we played in food. They knew that the physical store played in food, but they went on the site and all they saw was TVs and fridges. So they're like, well, where's the food? So what we've done now is we've made it clear to customer that online we're not in fresh food, but we are in pantry. And so this is what pantry means. And here's why you're better off shopping with us, because there's more for less. You get a lot more value buying in bulk and then thinking differently about your retail experience as it relates to fresh and frozen. And so we reinvented that experience. And so now what that does for us is where people used to come to our website maybe once a year, because we've now offered pantry, we're seeing the customer come 1.5 times and we're keeping to move that number. Mm-hmm. So over time, we could actually move from, you know, an experience where someone only comes once a year to where they come 2, 3, 4 times a year. And then we can now actually convert them to buy a general merchandise item, which is our core, because we've got pantry as an opportunity to increase the frequency of that relationship, and liquor that also does that for us. So that's the third bucket. And then the last bucket is really solving for this broad desire for assortment, where customers are looking for extended assortments and thinking about it in the context of B2B, which is wholesale, or thinking about it in the context of retail consumers. And that's what we're working on now, the future of our extended assortment solution, which would include marketplace, but also be broader than that to make sure we can provide people with as much product as they want.
Yeah.
And they don't have to wait 14 days to get it from China.
So launching a marketplace, when do you think this is realistic? When do you think you're going to...
No, we already have a marketplace today. Mm-hmm. We have a marketplace today that represents a substantial part of our business, but it's still a small part of our broader macro portfolio.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is to reimagine it and think about what we can do with it and be able to take it to the next level.
Right.
And that's the work we're doing.
Okay, yeah. Okay. And do you offer similar marketplaces in other countries around the world where Walmart operates?
Yes, yeah. Walmart has marketplace businesses around the world. Mm-hmm. The U.S. has a big marketplace business in Walmart.com. Mm-hmm. Many of our Latin America markets have a marketplace. The biggest we have is, as you may know, Walmart owns a business in India called Flipkart.
Yeah.
The largest e-com business.
Which
in India.
South African company, Naspers, you still hold a stake in.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That is correct.
In fact, so Walmart, I think, bought the stake from.
That is correct.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, so Flipkart is number one in India, and that's a full marketplace business.
Right.
And so we've got a lot of, and we work closely together in the Walmart world, so a lot of experience is shared, a lot of exchanges with all the different Walmart markets. So we're learning and introducing what makes sense to this market as well.
Does this marketplace have its own brand? Is it called MassMart?
Oh, today it's Macro. So in the Macro website, right, you would find, we have an average Macro store will have, about 35,000 to 40,000 total items. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a lot of those online, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But you compare that to a global, a big global marketplace in the world that would have, 100 million items, or so you start to imagine, yeah, what's possible in the context of a marketplace when you compare a physical retail store.
Yeah.
There's so much you can carry on the shelf, mm-hmm, and so in the future, 40,000 SKUs is probably not going to be enough.
Yeah.
So we have today, a relationship with a couple of thousand sellers, and the Macro website has, another 120,000, 130,000 SKUs already. Mm. So we've got a total of about 160,000 on the website today, and we want to build on that and reimagine that and take that to the next level.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about Black Friday, because that's coming up again. An American concept, actually, which has been exported to the rest of the world, and South Africans seem to have taken it to it like a duck to water. How relevant is Black Friday still, especially in the context of building an e-commerce business? It seems to me that maybe it's losing its luster a little bit. What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it may feel that way because we had this thing called COVID-19 and this in between. And so you had a moment there that created a perception that maybe things have slowed down. But I don't think the customer has changed. The mm-hmm. customers are still looking for value. Customers are still looking for bargains. And they're still looking for deals. And so now that we're back, this is the first year that we have a full clean year. Because even last year we had Black Friday back, but we still had parts of last year that we were still dealing with remnants. And so this is the first year. So it'll be interesting to see, and I think you're going to see a lot of retailers go back to the pre-COVID Black Friday experiences, where we had a case where for a moment folks were doing a full month and multiple weeks, whereas it started off with one day, mm-hmm, 1 week. And so you'll see probably more people go back to that, more condensed experience. But obviously the power of Black Friday is not just online. It's also the physical stores,
sure,
that actually do quite a bit of business during
it's
that
the one
time.
Day of the year I try not to go into a physical store.
so I don't think it's gone. I think, in fact, I would argue that we may see this year that mm-hmm. it is probably stronger now because there's pressure on the customer.
Yep.
The macroeconomic environment is tougher, and people are really looking for help,
mm-hmm,
and unemployment circumstances are also not the greatest. So therefore, as people probably think about Christmas gifts, a lot of that gets front loaded in November, and people start mm-hmm. looking for opportunities to make those decisions at a time when they can get good deals. So I think it's going to be still relevant. We are definitely gearing up. We believe it's naturally an important time for our business. And so, but also an important time when customers are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost to some extent an opportunity to reintroduce yourself at a time when people are looking. And so we will be sure to make sure we get our fair share. So we will be announcing a lot of details around our plans and obviously the deals and what we've got coming.
And will you be doing online specific stuff as well?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So we'll do both. Obviously, power the omni-channel first. So a lot of things you can get in store and online, but there will be online only, online exclusive opportunities as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we will probably, in some of our brands, start earlier. So whereas maybe the stores might have a five-day experience in some instances, we might start to do things online a week or two before and build up. So you could get some exclusive opportunities online even before you get to the main event. One of the things we're trying to make sure, in fact, we're going to do this year, which we're excited about, historically, you know, our business has had to adjust our fulfillment promise to customers during that week because of the demand and the pressures on the store, because you're juggling in-store customer desires with online, and the capabilities are limited. So we would have cases where maybe you have a 2 to 5 day customer promise, but during the November period, that promise might change to 7 to 10 days in order to be able to manage the expectations. Our goal this year is this, the first year where we are not going to change the promise. So we're going to keep our consistent promise of 2 to 5 days and take that through the November period and through the December period to make sure customers continue to get the expectation that they deserve.
Yeah, I imagine the OneDrop acquisition is playing a big part
correct.
Of that.
Right. That is okay. That is helping.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. How do you see the e-commerce landscape in South Africa developing in the coming years? I mean, there's a lot of speculation, none of it confirmed right now, that Amazon's coming into South Africa and it's going to launch a marketplace here in February or March of next year. Amazon is obviously a huge competitor to Walmart in the U.S. How does that change the competitive dynamics of this market? Can local consumers look forward to two global giants having it out for their share of wallets in the South African market? How is this all going to play out in the coming years, in your view?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's always important to clarify that, you know, Amazon is not the leader in every market.
Sure.
Case in point, India. So there's a lot of markets where you've got strong local players.
Yeah.
So the international dimension of a player doesn't always determine success.
Sure.
So we when we thought about our plans for South Africa a year and a half, 2 years ago, and we started shaping this out, you know, we took a five-year view to say, what do we think is possible in 5 years? We looked at a lot of data, a lot of trends, and came to an appreciation for where we thought the penetration was now and where we believed it'll be in 5 years and obviously 10 years out. And so as we looked at the reality of where we were and where we were starting from, and obviously looked at the landscape and where others were as well. So we have no doubt in our minds that we have the opportunity to be a destination for e-commerce that can be known for reliability and exceptional customer experience, which ultimately builds trust. And so that's what we're working on. So when we designed all what we're doing, with what I just explained to you, the first 2 years is getting this ecosystem working. Mm-hmm. Once this ecosystem is working and it powers these five propositions, we believe we can get to hyper-accelerated growth. Right now what we're seeing is really accelerated growth. But we believe there's more. We can get to hyper accelerated growth, which is incredible, which is not unusual, by the way. In many markets, if you look at e-com businesses, they've grown 200-400% and sustained it for 5 years.
Wow.
It's not unusual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but to do that, you've got to get a model and a machine working that can carry this forward. And we believe this ecosystem that we're putting together is absolutely crucial. And then you can focus on the strategy to win for each of your platforms. So you can be crystal clear on the builder's proposition, and builders can just focus on that and then leverage this. So this is what it's all about, and we can get to that hyper. So when we built it all out, we were building it with an expectation for any competitor.
Right.
So we were not building it in a vacuum. We were very conscious of the fact that new market entrants could come in. We were aware of who existed today. Obviously, we studied everybody. We had looked at what had happened in other markets when new market entrants had gone in. And so we made assumptions that in an environment where naturally the competitive landscape will rise, which is obvious even if Amazon does not come in or did not plan to come in, when you move from a 4% penetration to 10%, obviously new entrants are going to come in because the size of the prize by virtue has gotten bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now folks are not paying as much attention maybe because it's so small. You know, so we always expected that there will be a hyper competitive landscape. So we designed everything for that landscape.
Mm.
So we are very committed to our plans, and we feel pretty good that we stay the course. And we welcome the competition. Ultimately, the customer wins because, as I said, the biggest challenge we have in this market today is that there's too much friction in too many of the experiences, including ours, by the way. And we're not yet even where we should be. So we still have till next year. We got a lot of work to do. But until we all remove friction, make it easy for customers, why does somebody need to do three steps for something they can do in one step? You know, why do we have to have someone put their credit card every time they shop with us? Why do, you know, there's just all these questions we've got to keep asking. And as we continue to work on behalf of the customer, which is our focus, we think the customer will ultimately win and as the competition rises and, and all.
Before I let you go, I just want to ask about a segment of the market that people don't often talk about when it comes to e-commerce. And we all focus on business to consumer, but the business to business market is also an important market and growing. Maybe just talk to me about how big B2B is in the e-commerce context here in South Africa and worldwide, and where, what the outlook is for that segment.
Yeah, it's definitely one that doesn't get as much conversation. And I think the reason why in this market specifically, because the B2C is so nascent. And so there's not a lot of focus in that B2B. There's a few players, obviously, in B2B, particularly in food. And but if you look at those experiences, you know, they're also very, even more nascent than the B2C.
I actually had an idea they might be more developed.
No,
but they're not.
Not even close. In fact, I think if you talk to B2B clients in this market, their biggest frustration, or one of their biggest frustrations probably, is why can't I get the B2C experiences on the B2B? And the B2C experiences themselves are not where they should be yet. We also still have work to do. But they're using the B2C experiences, and then they come into the B2B experience and wonder, well, you know, what's happening here? You know, so I think it's an area that's got a lot of potential and a lot of opportunity. We obviously are a leader in that space offline.
Particularly through macro, I'd imagine,
Through macro specifically, But even builders in the context of home improvement, and we've got that as well. But the big, the macro opportunity is much more obviously diverse because you've got different segments, and so we have no doubt we have a right to play in the space. We do quite a bit of B2B business today, but it's B2B customers that use our B2C platform, so it was not really designed for their needs, but they use it, and we do have quite a bit of traffic going through it. I'm sure all the B2C platforms also have it. But I think what is required here is a real thoughtful focus on who is this B2B customer, what do they need that's unique and different from a B2C, how do I segment them, and then how do I create a targeted solution for each of them that meets and exceeds their expectations, and allow technology to help me do that. And then how do I ensure that their fulfillment requirements are met, because maybe the B2B person needs their stuff in 24 hours. But maybe in some cases a B2C person may not need the television in 24 hours. So understanding that and making sure that those capabilities are robust enough to be able to pivot to the needs of a B2B versus a B2C, and the flexibility to be able to be sensitive to the reality, particularly those that are resellers, that you are actually, the dependency on you to meet their requirements could affect their business outcomes. Or if somebody is running a hotel and relies on you to provide convenience for them, then you've got to be able to service that in the most seamless way. And the worst thing for a B2B person is to have to each time send somebody out of their business to go shop. It would be great if the limited labor they had could stay in their facility, and the experience to replenish their needs could be so simple and so easy, three clicks, and they could trust that it could happen. So those types of experiences, I think, are going to become more meaningful. And we're going to obviously be a critical part of that. But I think you'll see that space improve as well.
Great. Sylvester John, we could talk all afternoon about e-commerce, but I have to let you go at some point. Thank you for making the time. Thank you so much for coming into our studio and for talking to Tech Central today. It's much appreciated.
You're most welcome. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you.